And it is, in fact, afternoon. So good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll be hearing from Chief Patterson, Arielle Smith, and Assistant Chief Hamas today, in addition to myself. Appreciate you all joining us for just a quick update on some public safety issues in Madison. We're doing these for a minute under the previous chief and thought it would be a good idea to refresh and just be sharing consistent information around public safety in our city. As I think everyone knows, Madison is consistently one of the safest communities in the United States, especially for a city with a population of almost 300,000. In a moment, you're going to hear from Chief Patterson and some other our other speakers, and they'll get into specifics. But I think the headline really is that our city continues to see consistent downward trends in the incidence of crime across a wide range of different measures. And to be clear, even one incident of violent crime is one too many. And that's why we continue to work on making sure that we have a consistent and evidence-based approach to violence prevention in our community. And we do take a holistic approach to crime prevention and violence prevention. I want to thank Chief Patterson and the entire department for embracing data-driven policing. It is an evidence-based approach, and it is working in Madison, and you'll hear some numbers about that in a minute. But I also really want to highlight the collaborative effort between MPD and Public Health's Violence Prevention Unit. Eliminating violence in our community is not something that one agency can do alone. It does require proactive measures that go beyond just a law enforcement response. We must and are looking at the drivers of violence and working to find solutions that will lead to lasting change in our community. This is the type of work that you'll hear about from Arielle Smith, who's the director of our Violence Prevention Unit. You're also going to hear about our CARES program, an innovative effort that started in 2021. And as you may know, its goal is to respond to individuals that are experiencing nonviolent behavioral health emergencies with the care that they need. CARES teams are dispatched by the 911 center, and they are dispatched now where previously we would have dispatched a police squad car. The CARES team and the teams that go out are able to build relationships throughout the community, not just with the folks that they are serving, but also with resource centers, shelters, mental health care facilities. And the important thing here is that CARES isn't just a one-time response. They work to connect people with services. And they work to strengthen and maintain those connections so that the folks that they are serving are not just helped in the moment of crisis, but can actually get connected to help in the long term. This is, of course, the right thing to do for our residents, but it has the added benefit of freeing up our police resources so that they can focus on the things that they are specialists in particular, the focus on violent crime. CARES has expanded coverage since we launched it, and it is being actively sought out by other communities. So we have, I think, basically all of our surrounding communities would like us to serve them with CARES, and that is something that we are in conversation. You'll hear a little bit more about the one other community we do serve. That and the report on CARES will come from Assistant Chief Hamas. I think the thing that's most important for me to say today is that safety in Madison is something that takes a multi-agency approach. It is not something that is solely the responsibility of any one office or any one agency. And that we are continually working to improve public safety in our community across multiple agencies. I think it's particularly important to mention this given some of the rhetoric at the national level about crime in cities across the country. The people who are here on the ground doing the hard work to create safe communities are people from those communities that live and work here every day. We, at the local level, understand how to prevent violence before it starts. We understand what is best for our residents and what interventions are going to be most effective to bring down the temperature and to increase safety in our community. If the federal government wants to get serious about making every part of this country safe, then it would be providing more resources to local governments, whether that is through public health agencies, through law enforcement agencies, through EMS. There are plenty of ways in which we could use additional resources to help with our efforts. But dismantling the social safety net, putting more and more households into housing insecurity and economic insecurity is not the way to create safety in our country or in our community. So unfortunately, what we're seeing from the federal government right now is actively working against safety in our community. Nonetheless, here in the city of Madison, we are going to continue to do what's right. We are going to continue to use evidence-based practices, and we are going to continue to invest in the things that are working to make Madison a safer place for everyone. Thank you, and I'm happy to turn it over to Chief Patterson to talk about some of the trends that we're seeing here in Madison.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Well, fresh off my swearing in, it's nice to start with this type of news. So I will say that we are seeing some significant and very impressive decreases in all of our major track crimes in 2025. And to give you a reference, comparing this year to our three-year average, so 2022 through 2024, the same year-to-date time period, our average has been 583 burglaries. And this year we're at 335, so that's a 43% decrease. Stolen autos, our three-year average, 477, and this year we're at 230. So that's a 52% decrease in stolen autos. Theft from autos, 581 is our three-year average. This year we're at 472, which would be a 19% decrease. Our homicides, which are always thankfully low in Madison, are at a 55% decrease. Our three-year average is 7, this year only 3. Shots fired, this is not including self-inflicted gunshots. Our three-year average, 117, this year we're at 78, so it's a 33% decline. And then aggravated assaults, currently we're at 457, where our three-year average is 473, so it's a 3% decrease. We are extremely proud, both as a police department and as members of Team City, to see this type of decline this year. I think it's really indicative of how our officers have embraced data-informed decision-making, data-informed problem-solving, but it's also demonstrating the collaboration that our community, frankly, has been willing to participate in as well, and deepening their collaborative efforts with our staff. But we think it's also reflective of the deeper collaborations that we have with public health, with the fire department, through the CARES team, and certainly with MMSD in our schools. VPU's direct crime prevention efforts, I think, have clearly had an impact. It's always difficult to measure what we prevent, but clearly this surgical approach has been very impactful. I will say at the start of this year, members of the VPU have been attending our monthly accountability meetings, and that has really improved communication between our command staff and members of the VPU. We meet regularly with them and with the MMSD staff, so I really have to credit the mayor. That's a biweekly occurrence where we're focusing on events in our community and focusing on improving communication between partners. And I will say CARES has quickly become a trusted partner out on the street. If you listen to our radio dispatch every day, officers are routinely requesting for CARES assistance. They're routinely trying to divert and deflect more calls away from them and towards CARES, and I think it has clearly played a significant role in what we're seeing across the city. So I really have to give you, Mayor, credit. You pushed us a bit out of our comfort zone with data-informed decision-making and increasing our collaborative efforts. So we're seeing impressive results, and as a new chief, it's a great pleasure to share that with you. So thank you. I'll turn it over to Ariel Smith.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much, Mayor and fellow public safety partners, for the opportunity to give an update on Public Health's Violence Prevention Unit, affectionately called the VPU, as Chief Patterson mentioned. We're honored with the privilege of serving as the Office of Violence Prevention for both the City of Madison and Dane County. Our team is grateful to be also recognized as a part of a national network of violence prevention offices. A little bit more about us. The Violence Prevention Unit, or VPU, operates through four key components: violence prevention efforts, leading the coordination of the Community Safety Intervention Team, also known as CSIT, violence intervention efforts, as well as supporting community healing following violent events. Our work spans a broad spectrum from supporting victims and engagers of violence to raising public awareness, coordinating cross-sector responses when critical incidents occur with our public safety partners, Madison Police Department and Madison Fire Department, as well as promoting safe environments. We take a trauma-informed, culturally responsive, and data-driven approach that prioritizes collaboration, prevention, and healing. So where we are today is on track with what you've heard so far today. We are also trending downwards in terms of cases that we have reviewed this year. Between 2024 and 2025, the total incidents discussed and acted upon in CSIT have decreased by more than 50%. However, over half of the 2025 incidences still have required additional intervention from our staff and our partners, showing that while frequency is down, the complexity of our cases that we are managing and the individuals we are supporting is still at an all-time high. Also, firearm-related incidences continue to be a major focus of that team and of our team at large. Our violence intervention team, they provide case management services, life coaching, and also victim and engager services with a growing focus on place-based approaches. We have deployed or trained workers within 24 to 72 hours of a violent incident, and that is meeting our goal, which is up from last year in terms of that response time. Our model emphasizes rapid response, community voice, and a long-term investment in healing and safety in both the place-based and individual spaces. For now, we continue to see our drivers of violence remain consistent. We are still seeing the socioeconomic stressors, structural inequities, like including systematic racism and social exclusion, as well as concentrated public disorder. And so in terms of our violence prevention efforts, we will continue to support investments and work that is happening across Team City, as well as in Dane County, to help to address those factors in our community. Some exciting news: we are developing the next iteration of our 5-year community-based strategic plan for reducing and addressing violence in our community. I want to give a special thank you to everyone in the community who has contributed to that plan so far. Your feedback and your information and experiences has been incredibly valuable to this process. The roadmap currently is wrapping up our data collection and analysis process and is still on track to be released in early 2026. That roadmap will build on the idea that violence is preventable and that sustainable safety comes from community leadership, shared accountability, and coordinated action. I appreciate the partnership that Madison Police Department has offered to our team and recognizing that this is not just a law enforcement issue, it's also a public health priority that demands shared responsibility across all of our systems. We're grateful for the ongoing collaboration amongst law enforcement agencies, emergency response, and other city, county agencies and partners. Together, we are not only reducing incidences, but we're building a stronger, safer, and more connected City of Madison. And with that, I will pass it off to Assistant Chief Haynes with MFD.
Thanks, Ariel. Good afternoon, everyone. Today, I'm privileged to be able to share with you a little bit about our CARES program. For those that don't know, CARES stands for our Community Alternative Response Emergency Services. These are individuals that respond to behavioral emergencies that are nonviolent in nature. They're staffed with a community paramedic and a journey mental health crisis worker on each of one of those teams. We started CARES in September of 2021. At that time, we ran one team Monday through Friday during daytime hours. And now to today, we've expanded the service to be three different teams running Monday through Friday from the hours of 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. And then we have one team staffing Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. as well. To date, CARES has responded to just under 11,000 calls. These teams are extremely busy. They're averaging about 12 calls per day as a unit. The individuals that they encounter, we have about 40% of those that are helped in person. They're not transported anywhere. The ones that our CARES team do transport, we send about 25% of those individuals to the emergency departments, and then the rest of those get transported to other resources in the community to help them get the services that they need. CARES routinely refers individuals that they encounter to a number of different community services, established community services that are out there in our community to really get them in the right direction and get them the services that they need. Of note, only 2% of the individuals that we encounter with CARES are transferred over to law enforcement. That's a really huge impact, and as Chief Patterson alluded to, it's freed up the officers' workload there, and it's really, again, directing the individuals to the services they need instead of the traditional response where it would have just been historically a fire and EMS response or a law enforcement response. That's only about 130 individuals out of the 6,700 individuals that we've encountered with CARES, so it's a pretty phenomenal statistic. The mayor alluded to that we're in the process right now of a year-long pilot expansion program of providing service to the city of Sun Prairie. That started in early February of this year, and that'll expire in early February of 2026. We're currently evaluating how the numbers are looking and whether or not we're going to continue service into the city of Sun Prairie or the potential of expansion to other communities in the area. To date, we've ran about 60 calls into the city of Sun Prairie since the start of that program. CARES has been and they'll continue to be a really valuable asset to our community. As I alluded to, they are providing resources and qualified individuals to help people in our community in need that don't necessarily require the traditional response of fire and EMS or law enforcement. We thank the mayor and the whole county, for that matter, for the support of the program. Again, we look to future growth and development of it, and that's pretty much what we're putting a feather in our cap of with CARES. It's pretty awesome. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. All right, so that's our update. I think all of us would be happy to answer a few questions if you have them.
Chief, I'm wondering if you could go into this, dealing with this White Horse Middle School situation and what that looks like from your guys' end when you see a report like that and how you so quickly sort of determine that questionable, I guess.
Well, hopefully you saw our update from last night, but you know, through preliminary witness statements and through video evidence, it was clear to us there were inconsistencies from what we were able to verify and then obviously what was being posted and reposted online. And so we felt compelled to get something out quickly to try to convey that message, because clearly, you know, I think some damage perhaps could have been done to the investigation if, you know, it persisted, you know, for another day. So
I guess I'm just curious, having to deal with reports like that, what that may be embedded online, like what's that like? And that takes resources away from you guys, right?
Well, it's to be honest, I don't think as a community it's something we should be participating in. As unverified, unchecked, you know, social media posts should not be driving how we react in our community. It should certainly make people ask questions. But the way that it was traveling online was, I think, potentially dangerous to the investigation and damaging to the investigation. So, you know, it's frustrating, to be very blunt. And it is certainly a distraction to the employees who are trying to do the investigative work and verify what may or may not have occurred.
To my colleague's point, this might be a burgeoning new area of investigation you have to take time and resources into, but with AI and deepfakes and things becoming more prevalent in our social media communities and whatnot, how hard is that to identify what is factual versus falsified when you're looking at investigations and details and videos and things like that?
It's challenging. I mean, it's nothing new to the profession, obviously. We have to verify everything that's presented is fact. But certainly the speed at which it was traveling is unique. But we have to be on top of how it might be jeopardizing potentially the safety of other people as well. So there was an address on Margaret Street that was being posted and reposted, and based on where we're able to see, that address has nothing to do with anything. And so these are people just living their lives who are now, you know, fearful, frankly, because their address is being posted as involved, when so far we don't think that's the case.
Let me add something to that. I think it's really important for everyone, I mean everyone, but everyone in Madison certainly, to think twice before you believe something that's posted on social media, and to definitely think twice before you share it. Because, you know, to your point, with the rise of deepfakes and AI and mis- and disinformation on social media, we cannot take for granted that what you see online is actually true. So I think use your discretion, use your common sense, verify things before you share them. And if something is actually happening, if there is harm being done, please don't take to social media as your first step, right? Please come to the appropriate authorities, whether that is the police department or the fire department, public health, the school district. That is the place to go if there is harm being done, so that the appropriate authorities can work together to stop the harm and address the issue. But please use some common sense and discretion when you're dealing with social media, because honestly, we just can't trust anymore that things posted on social media are real or true.
Chief, so I don't mean to go down a rabbit hole. Yeah, we're going to ask a follow-up to that question. With that becoming harder to decipher fact from falsified, have you, as the new lead lawman in the city, how do you look at recruiting? Do you start looking at a resume for a potential officer with more tech savvy background? And how do you start maybe hiring and adapting to this ongoing trend of technology becoming more, you know, I guess high tech?
No, that's a good question. I mean, fortunately, it wasn't a part of the Chief's process, because I would have been selected. I'm a social media misfit. So, I think the generation of employees that we're interviewing now are far more advanced than, frankly, my generation. And so, in short, we're not specifically looking for tech-savvy folks. I mean, we're looking for a diverse candidate that reflects the diversity of our community. And, you know, along the way, hopefully we pick up some of those key skills. I just want to reiterate, though, we're still investigating this particular case. It is an independent investigation from what the school district is doing. They've been completely cooperative, as we would expect from them. They're a great partner in our community, but we'll keep working this case just like any other, just hopefully soon without the social media, you know, noise in the background. So,
getting back to your study now today, with the details about the shootings in Madison down, there still are shootings that are happening right now. Do you see any trends as to how those shootings are originating, whether they be domestic or gang-related? Where are sort of the commonalities to the shootings that do take place?
Well, one of the most concerning trends that Ariel and I and the mayor have talked about recently are the accidental shootings, the people that are carrying the gun poorly, are poorly trained, and, you know, frankly, are shooting themselves or shooting others accidentally. And you know, we've had a couple deaths in our community this year because of poorly handled or poorly stored weapons. So to me, that this year, that's the most concerning trend. Certainly, we're celebrating the decline overall, but we have to continue to look at that, because it's certainly a disturbing trend this year.
Yeah. Any other questions?
When we're talking about these trends, the lowering over the year, is that something that was a direct result of any policy, or is this just part of the national trend of getting back to, you know, that pre-COVID spike in crime rates?
Well, that's a good question, George. I mean, certainly other communities are also seeing some declines. I mean, I can tell you prevention work is difficult to measure, but for us, we have now seen year two of data-informed decision our operational decision-making, and we're seeing even greater declines than we saw in year one. We've deepened our collaborations with our preventative partners, both VPU and CARES. I cannot believe with a straight face that these aren't having meaningful impacts on what we're seeing in our community. I think they're very much so impacting what we're seeing on the ground. And our officers, frankly, are embracing it. They're having time freed up by CARES so that they can be more surgical with their community engagement efforts and their crime prevention efforts in our neighborhoods. So it's been great.
Can you just explain a little bit more about just what you mean when you say data-driven policing? What is that data that you guys are all looking at to kind of lead to this decrease in crimes over the last year?
So we're using our incident-related data to identify hotspots, to identify crime trends in certain neighborhoods, but also to identify certain areas around our city that deserve more police resources than others. So when officers have unobligated time where they're not responding to calls for service, we're being more intentional with how we direct them and where we direct them, and also when. So, you know, midnight in a certain neighborhood may not have the same need as it does at 12 p.m. So we're just trying to be smarter with the resources that we have out every day.
One of the things that, that was the expert answer, right? But for the folks who don't speak policing necessarily, it's good. It's good. It's got to have the experts, no question. But one of the things that I have heard I think is perhaps helps to understand is that they're really using data to understand where and when things are happening, and sometimes also who is involved. And so you could see trends in any of those realms and then act on that. So if you know, for example, that you've got an area of the city where you're seeing a sort of repeat of car thefts, for example, this is a really common one that they can intervene on, right? So you're seeing an uptick in car thefts in a neighborhood. They will go out and they will communicate to that neighborhood. Sometimes they'll do actual flyering on cars. Remember to lock your car, you know, watch out. There's been an uptick. Here's some of the things you can do to keep yourself safe and not be a victim. And that's a sort of immediate, rather, you can't do that citywide, nor do you need to do it citywide, right? You need to do it where it's happening so that that neighborhood is aware that there's a particular danger right now and that there are things they could do to help keep themselves and their neighbors safe. And so it's a really focused and directed response to things that we're seeing out there happening, not quite real time, but pretty close. I think the other example that is helpful to understand is that, for example, if a particular property is seeing a number of incidents over time, that district, that captain in that district might work actually with that property owner or with the tenant. What can we do? How can we look at crime prevention through environmental design? Can we add lighting? Can we remove shrubbery? Can we think about your safety plan? Can we, talk about cameras? Can we, so that we're specifically intervening at that place to make a difference? So it all starts with the data of where we're seeing things happen, but then they're turning to evidence-based solutions to intervene to prevent further things happening in that area or in that time period. Any other questions? All right, thank you all very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.